on my mind is reading dusty old books, especially when you're in all that tight leather.
Pig.
His chuckle echoed up through the library, amid the fluttering papers and scratching pens of the priestesses working throughout.
How could you winnow inside the house? I thought there were wards against it.
The library makes its own rules, apparently.
I snorted.
2 hours of work, he promised me, turning back to the table and flaring his wings. A veritable screen to block my view of him, and his view of me. Then we can play.
I gave him a vulgar gesture.
I saw that.
I did it again, and his laugh floated to me as I faced the book stacks before me and began to read.
We found a myriad of information about the wall and its forming. When we compared our notes 2 hours later, many of the texts were conflicting, all of them claiming absolute authority on the subject. But there were a few similar details that Rhys had not known. He'd been healing at the cabin in the mountains when they'd formed the wall, when they'd signed that treaty. The details that emerged had been murky at best, but the various texts Clotho had dug up on the wall's formation and rules agreed on one thing. It had never been made to last. No, initially the wall had been a temporary solution, to cleave human and fairy until peace settled long enough for them to later reconvene and decide how they were to live together, as one people. But the wall had remained. Humans had grown old and died, and their children had forgotten the promises of their parents, their grandparents, their ancestors. And the High Fae who survived. It was a new world, without slaves. Lesser fairies stepped in to replace the missing free labor. Territory boundaries had been redrawn to accommodate those displaced. Such a great shift in the world in those initial centuries. So many working to move past war, to heal, that the wall became permanent. The wall became legend. Even if all seven courts ally, I said, as we plucked grapes from a silver bowl in a quiet sitting room in the House of Wind, having left the dim library for some much-needed sunshine. Even if Kyr and the Court of Nightmares join too, will we stand a chance in this war? Rhys leaned back in the embroidered chair before the floor-to-ceiling window. Valaris was a glittering sprawl below and beyond, serene and lovely, even with the scars of battle now peppering it. Army against army, the possibility of victory is slim.
Blunt, honest words.
I shifted in my own identical chair on the other side of the low-lying table between us.
Could you...
If you and the King of Highburn went head-to-head...
Would I win?
Rhys lifted a brow and studied the city.
I don't know. He's been smart about keeping the extent of his power hidden. But he had to resort to trickery and threats to beat us that day in Highburn. He has thousands of years of knowledge and training. If he and I fought... I doubt he will let it come to that. He stands a better chance at sure victory by overwhelming us with numbers and stretching us thin. If we fought one-on-one, if he'd even accept an open challenge from me, the damage would be catastrophic. And that's without him wielding the cauldron.
My heart stumbled. Rhys went on. I'm willing to take the brunt of it, if it means the others will at least stand with us against him. I clenched the tufted arms of the chair.
You shouldn't have to.
It might be the only choice.
I don't accept that as an option.
He blinked at me.
Prithian might need me as an option.
Because with that power of his, he'd take on the king and his entire army, burn himself out until he was...
I need you as an option in my future.
Silence. And even with the sun warming my feet, a terrible cold spread through me. His throat bobbed.
If it means giving you a future, then I'm willing to do You will do no such thing, I panted through my bare teeth, leaning forward in my chair.
Rhys only watched me, eyes shadowed.
How can you ask me not to give everything I have to ensure that you, that my family and people survive?
You've given enough.
Not enough. Not yet.
It was hard to breathe, to see past the burning in my eyes.
Why? Where does this come from, Rhys?
For once, he didn't answer. And there was something brittle enough in his expression, some long, unhealed wound that glimmered there, that I sighed, rubbed my face, and then said,
Just work with me, with all of us, together. This isn't your burden alone.
He plucked another grape from its stem, chewed, his lips tilted in a faint smile.
So what do you propose, then?
I could still see that vulnerability in his eyes, still feel it in that bond between us, but I angled my head. I sorted through all I knew, all that had happened, considered the books I'd read in the library below, a library that housed...
Amryn warned us to never put the two halves of the book together, I mused.
But I did. She said that older things might be awoken by it, might come sniffing.
Rhys crossed an ankle over a knee.
Highburn might have the numbers, I said. But what if we had the monsters?
You said Highburn will see an alliance with all the courts coming, but perhaps not one with things wholly unconnected.
I leaned forward. And I'm not talking about the monsters roaming across the world. I'm talking about one in particular. One who has nothing to lose and everything to gain. One that I would do everything in my power to use, rather than let Rhys face the brunt of this alone. His brows rose.
Oh?
The Bone Carver, I clarified. He and Amryn have both been looking for a way back to their own worlds. The Carver had been insistent, relentless, in asking me that day in the prison about where I had gone during death. I could have sworn Rhys's golden brown skin paled, but I added, I wonder if it's time to ask him what he'd give to go back home.
Chapter 21. The aching muscles along my back, core, and thighs had gone into complete revolt by the time Rhys and I parted ways. My mate heading off to track down Cassian, who would be my escort tomorrow morning to the prison. If both of us had gone, it would perhaps look too desperate, too vital. But if the High Lady and her general went to visit the Carver to pose some hypothetical questions, it would still show our hand, but perhaps not quite how badly we needed any extra bit of assistance. And Cassian, unsurprisingly, knew more about the Carver than anyone, thanks to some morbid fascination with all of the prison's inmates. Especially since he was responsible for jailing some of them. But while Rhys sought out Cassian, I had a task of my own. I was wincing and hissing as I strode through the murky red halls of the house to find my sister and Amryn, to see which of them was still standing after their first lesson, among other things. I found them in a quiet, forgotten workroom, coldly watching each other. Books lay scattered on the table between them. A ticking clock by the dusty cabinets was the only sound.
"Sorry to interrupt your staring contest," I said, lingering in the doorway. I rubbed at a spot low in my back. "I wanted to see how the first lesson was going."
"Fine."
Amryn didn't take her eyes off my sister, a faint smile playing about her red mouth. I studied Nesta, who gazed at Amryn, utterly stone-faced.
"What are you doing?"
"Waiting," Amryn said. For what?
For busybodies to leave us alone.
I straightened, clearing my throat. Is this part of her training?
Amryn turned her head to me with exaggerated slowness, her chin-length, razor-straight hair shifting with the movement.
Rhys has his own method of training you. I have mine.
Her white teeth flashed with every word.
We visit the Court of Nightmares tomorrow night. She needs some basic training before we do.
Like what?
Amryn sighed the ceiling. Shielding herself from prying minds and powers.
I blinked. I should have thought of that. That if Nesta were to join us, be it the Hewn City, she would need some defenses beyond what we could offer her.
Nesta at last looked to me, her face as cold as ever.
Are you all right? I asked her.
Amryn clicked her tongue.
She's fine. Stubborn as an ass. But as you're related, I'm not surprised.
I scowled.
How am I supposed to know what your methods are? For all I know, you picked up some terrible techniques in that prison.
Careful. So careful. Amryn hissed.
That place taught me plenty of things, but certainly not this.
I angled my head, the portrait of curiosity.
Did you ever interact with the others?
The fewer people who knew about my trip tomorrow to see the Carver, the safer it was. The less chance of Hybern catching wind of it. Not for any fear of betrayal, but there was always risk.
Azriel, now off hunting for information on the Autumn Court, would be told when he returned tonight. More, I'd tell her eventually. But Amryn.
Rhys and I decided to wait to tell Amryn. The last time we'd gone to the prison, she'd been testy. Telling her we planned to unleash one of her fellow inmates, perhaps not the best thing to mention while we waited for her to find a way to heal that wall. And train my sister.
Impatience rippled across Amryn's face, those silver eyes flaring.
I only spoke to them in whispers and echoes through rock, girl, and I was glad of it.
What's in the prison? Nesta asked at last.
A hell entombed in stone, Amryn said.
Full of creatures, you should thank the mother no longer walk the earth freely.
Nesta frowned deeply but shut her mouth.
Like who?
I asked. Any extra information she might have.
Amryn bared her teeth.
I am giving a magic lesson, not a history one. She waved a dismissive hand.
If you want someone to gossip with, go find one of the dogs. I'm sure Cassian's still sniffing around upstairs.
Nesta's lips twitched upward.
Amryn pointed at her with a slender finger ending in a sharp, manicured nail.
Concentrate. Vital organs must be shielded at all times.
I tapped a hand against the open doorway.
I'll keep looking for more information for you in the library, Amryn.
No response.
Good luck, I added. She doesn't need luck, Amryn said.
Nesta huffed a laugh.
I took that as the only farewell I'd get. Perhaps letting Amryn and Nesta train together was a bad choice. Even if the prospect of unleashing them upon the Court of Nightmares... I smiled a bit at the thought.
By the time Moore, Rhys, Cassian, and I gathered for dinner at the townhouse, Azriel still off spying, my muscles were so sore I could barely walk up the front stairs. Sore enough that any plans I had to visit Lucien up at the house after the meal vanished. Moore was testy and quiet throughout, no doubt in anticipation of the visit tomorrow night. She'd had to work with Kier plenty throughout the centuries, and yet tomorrow.
She'd only warned Reese once, while we ate, that he should thoroughly consider any offer Kier might give him in exchange for his army. Reese had shrugged, saying he'd think about it when the time came. A non-answer, and one that made Moor grit her teeth. I didn't blame her. Long before the war, her family had brutalized her in ways I didn't let myself consider. Not a day before I was to meet with them again, ask them for help. Work with them. Reese, mother bless him, had a bath waiting for me after the meal. I'd need all my strength for tomorrow, for the monsters I was to face beneath two very different mountains. I hadn't visited this place for months, but the carved stone walls were just as I'd last seen them, the darkness still interrupted by bracketed torches. Not the prison, under the mountain. But instead of Claire's mutilated body, spiked high to the wall above me, her blue-gray eyes were still wide with terror. Gone was the haughty iciness, the queenly jut to her chin. Vesta. They'd done precisely to her, wound for wound, what they'd done to Claire. And behind me, screaming and pleading, I turned, finding Elaine, naked and weeping, tied to that enormous spit. What I had once been threatened to endure. Gnarled, masked fairies rotated the iron handles, turning her over. I tried to move. Tried to lunge, but I was frozen, utterly bound by invisible chains to the floor. Feminine laughter flitted from the other end of that throne room, from the dais, now empty. Empty because that was Amarantha, strutting into the gloom, down some hall that hadn't been there before, but now stretched away into nothing. Rhysand followed a step behind her, going with her. To that bedroom. He looked over his shoulder at me, only once. Over his wings. His wings, which were out, which she'd see and destroy right after she... I was screaming for him to stop, thrashing at those bonds. Elaine's pleading rose higher and higher. Reese kept walking with Amarantha. Let her take his hand and tug him along. I couldn't move. Couldn't stop it. Any of it. I was hauled out of the dream like a thrashing fish from a net cast deep into the sea. And when I surfaced, I remained half there, half in my body, half under the mountain, watching as... Breathe. The word was an order, laced with that primal command he so rarely wielded. But my eyes focused, my chest expanded. I slipped a bit further back into my body. Again. I did so. His face came into view. Fae lights murmuring to life inside their lamps and bowls in our bedroom. His wings were tucked in tight, framing his disheveled hair, his drawn face. Reese. Again. He only said. I obeyed. My bones had turned brittle, my stomach a roiling mess. I closed my eyes, fighting the nausea. Rippling terror kept its talons buried deep. I could still see it. The way she'd led him down that hall, to... I surged, rolling to the edge of the mattress and clamping down hard as my body tried to heave up its contents onto the carpet. His hand was instantly on my back. Rubbing soothing circles, utterly willing to let me vomit right over the side of the bed. But I focused on my breathing, on closing down those memories, one by one. Memories repainted. I lay half sprawled over the edge for uncounted minutes. He rubbed my back throughout. When I could finally move, when the nausea had subsided, I twisted back over. And the sight of that face. I slid my arms around his waist, gripping tightly as he pressed a silent kiss to my hair, reminding myself over and over that we were out, We had survived. Never again. Never again would I let someone hurt him like that. Hurt my sisters like that. Never again.
Chapter 22. I felt Reese's attention on me while we dressed the next morning, and throughout our hearty breakfast. Yet he didn't push, didn't demand to know what had dragged me into that screaming hell. It had been a long while since those nightmares had hauled either of us from sleep, blurred the lines. It was only when we stood in the foyer, waiting for Cassian before we winnowed to the prison, that Reese asked from where he leaned against the stair banister, "Do you need to talk about it?" My Illyrian leathers groaned as I turned toward him. Reese clarified, "With me, or anyone." I answered him truthfully, tugging at the end of my braid.
"With everything bearing down on us, everything's at stake."
I let my braid drop. "I don't know. I think it's torn open some part of me that was slowly repairing. Repairing thanks to both of us." He nodded, no fear or reproach in his eyes. So I told him. All of it. Stumbling over the parts that still made me ill. He only listened. And when I was done, that shakiness remained, but speaking it, voicing it aloud to him, the savage grip of those terrors lightened, cleared away like dew in the sun. I freed a long breath as if blowing those fears from me, letting my body loosen in its wake. Reese silently pushed off the banister and kissed me. Once. Twice. Cassian stalked through the front door a heartbeat later and groaned that it was too early to stomach the sight of us kissing. My mate only snarled at him before he took us both by the hand and winnowed us to the prison. Reese gripped my fingers tighter than usual as the wind ripped around us, Cassian now wisely keeping silent. And as we emerged from that black, tumbling wind, Reese leaned over to kiss me a third time, sweet and soft, before the gray light and roaring wind greeted us. Apparently, the prison was cold and misty no matter the time of year. Standing at the base of the mossy, rocky mountain under which the prison was built, Cassian and I frowned up at the slope. Despite the Illyrian leathers, the chill seeped into my bones. I rubbed at my arms, lifting my brows at Reese, who had remained in his usual attire, so out of place in this damp, windy speck of green in the middle of a gray sea. The wind ruffled his black hair as he surveyed us, Cassian already sizing up the mountain like some opponent. Twin Illyrian blades were crossed over the general's muscled back. "When you're in there," Reese said, the words barely audible over the wind and silver streams running down the mountainside. "You won't be able to reach me."
"Why?"
I rubbed my already freezing hands together before puffing a hot breath into the cradle of my palms.
"Wards and spells far older than Prithian," was all Reese said.
He jerked his chin to Cassian.
"Don't let each other out of your sight."
It was the dead seriousness with which we spoke that kept me from retorting. Indeed, my mate's eyes were hard, unflinching. While we were here, he and Asriel were to discuss what he'd found out about Autumn's leanings in this war, and then adjust their strategy for the meeting with the High Lords. But I could sense it, the urge to request he join us, watch over us.
"Shout down the bond when you're out again,"
Reese said with a mildness that didn't reach his gaze. Cassian looked back over a shoulder.
"Get back to Valaris, you mother hen. We'll be fine."
Reese leveled another uncharacteristically hard stare at him.
"Remember who you put in here, Cassian."
Cassian just tucked in his wings, as if every muscle shifted toward battle. Steady and solid as the mountain we were about to climb. With a wink at me,
Rhys vanished. Cassian checked the buckles on his sword and motioned to me to start the long trek up the hill. My gut tightened at the climb ahead. The shrieking hollowness of this place. Who did you put in here? The mossy earth cushioned my steps. Cassian put a scar-flecked finger to his lips.
Best left for another time.
Right. I fell into step beside him, my thighs burning with the steep hike. Mist chilled my face. Conserving his strength, Cassian wasn't wasting a drop of energy on shielding us from the elements.
You really think unleashing the Carver will do the trick against Highburn?
You're the general, I panted. You, tell me. He considered, the wind tossing his dark hair over his tan face.
Even if you promise to find a way to send him back to his own world with the book, or give him whatever unholy thing he wants,
Cassian mused.
I think you'd better find a way to control him in this world, or else we'll be fighting enemies on all fronts. And I know which one will hand our asses to us.
The Carver's that bad.
You're asking this right before we're to meet with him?
I hissed. I assumed Rhys would have put his foot down if it was that risky.
Rhys has been known to hatch plans that make my heart stop dead,
Cassian grumbled.
So, I wouldn't count on him to be the voice of reason.
I scowled at Cassian, earning a wolfish grin in return. But Cassian scanned the heavy gray sky, as if hunting for spying eyes. Then the moss and grass and rocks beneath our boots for listening ears below.
There was life here,
he said, answering my question at last.
Before the High Lords took Prithian. Old gods, we called them. They ruled the forests and the rivers and the mountains. Some were those things. Then the magic shifted to the High Fae, who brought the Cauldron and Mother along with them. And though the old gods were still worshipped by a select few, most people forgot them.
I grappled onto a large gray rock as I climbed over it. The Bone Carver was an old god? He dragged a hand through his hair, the siphon gleaming in the watery light.
That's what legend says, along with whispers of being able to fell hundreds of soldiers with one breath.
A chill rippled down my skin that had nothing to do with the brisk wind. Useful on a battlefield? Cassian's golden brown skin paled while his eyes churned with the thought.
Not without the proper precautions. Not without him being bound to obey us within an inch of his life.
Which I'd have to figure out as well, I supposed. How did he wind up here? In the prison?
I don't know. No one does.
Cassian helped me over a boulder, his hand gripping mine tightly.
But how do you plan on freeing him from the prison?
I winced. I suppose our friend would know, since she got out. Careful. We had to be careful when mentioning Amryn's name here. Cassian's face grew solemn.
She doesn't like to talk about how she did it, Feyre. I'd be careful how you push her.
Since we still had not told Amryn where we were today, what we were doing. I thought about saying more, but ahead, far up the slope, the massive bone gates opened. I'd forgotten it. The weight of the air inside the prison. Like wading through the unstirred air of a tomb. Like stealing a breath from the open mouth of a skull. We both bore an Illyrian blade in one hand, the phalite bobbing ahead to show the way, occasionally dancing and sliding along the shining metal. Our other hands. Cassian clenched my fingers as tightly as I clutched his, while we descended into the eternal blackness of the prison, our steps crunching on the dry ground. There were no doors, none that we could see. But behind that solid, black rock, I could still feel them. Could have sworn a faint scratching sound filled the passage, from the other side of that rock, as if someone were running their nails down it. Something huge, and old, and quiet as the wind through a field of wheat. Cassian kept utterly silent, tracking something, counting something. This could be a very bad idea, I admitted, my grip tightening on his hand.
Oh, it most certainly is,
Cassian said with a faint smile as we continued down and down into the heavy black and thrumming silence.
But this is war. We don't have the luxury of good ideas, only picking between the bad ones.
The bone carver's cell door swung open the moment I laid my palm to it.
Worth the misery of being Reese's mate,
Cassian quipped as the white bone swung away into darkness, a light chuckle within. The amusement faded from Cassian's face at the sound, as we walked into the cell, still hand in hand. The orb of phalite bobbed ahead, illuminating the stone-hewn cell. Cassian growled at what it revealed. Who it revealed. Wholly different, no doubt, from the same young boy who now smiled at me. Dark-haired, with eyes of crushing blue. I started at the child's face, but I had not noticed that first time, what I had not understood. It was Rhysand's face. The coloring, the eyes. It was my mate's face. But the carver's full, wide mouth curled into that hideous smile. That was my mouth. My father's mouth. The hair on my arms rose. The carver inclined his head in greeting. In greeting and in confirmation, as if he knew precisely what I had realized, who I had seen and was seeing. The High Lord's son. My son. Our son. Should we survive long enough to bear him? Should I not fail in my task to recruit the carver? Should we not fail to unify the High Lords and the Court of Nightmares, and keep that wall intact? It was an effort to keep my knees from buckling. Cassian's face was pale enough that I knew whatever he was seeing, it wasn't a beautiful young boy.
I was wondering when you'd return, the carver said, that boy's voice sweet and yet dreadful, from the ancient creature that lurked beneath it. Hi, lady, he added to me. Please accept my congratulations on your union. A glance at Cassian. I can smell the wind on you. Another little smile. Have you brought me a gift? I reached into the pocket of my jacket and chucked a small shard of bone, no bigger than my hand, at the carver's feet. This is all that's left of the adder, after I splattered him on the streets of Alaris. Those blue eyes flared with unholy delight. I hadn't even known we'd kept this fragment. It had been stored until now, precisely for this sort of thing.
So bloodthirsty, my new high lady, the carver purred, picking up the cracked bone and turning it over in those small, delicate hands. And then the carver said, I smell my sister on you, curse breaker.
My mouth went dry. His sister.
Did you steal from her? Did she weave a thread of your life into her loom?
The weaver of the wood. My heart thundered. No breathing could steady it. Cassian's hand tightened around mine.
The carver purred to Cassian.
If I tell you a secret, warrior heart, what will you give me?
Neither of us spoke. Carefully. We'd have to phrase and do this so carefully. The carver stroked the shard of bone in his palm, attention fixed upon a stone-faced Cassian.
What if I tell you what the rock and darkness and sea beyond whispered to me, Lord of Bloodshed? How they shuddered in fear on that island across the sea? How they trembled when she emerged? She took something. Something precious. She ripped it out with her teeth.
Cassian's golden brown face had drained of color, his wings tucking in tight.
What did you wake that day in Highburn, Prince of Bastards?
My blood went cold.
What came out was not what went in.
A rasping laugh as the carver laid the shard of bone on the ground beside him.
How lovely she is. New as a fawn, and yet ancient as the sea. How she calls to you. A queen, as my sister once was. Terrible and proud, beautiful as a winter sunrise.
Rhys had warned me of the inmate's capacity to lie. To sell anything to get free.
Nesta,
the bone carver murmured.
Nesta.
I squeezed Cassian's hand. Enough. It was enough of this teasing and taunting. But he didn't look at me.
How the wind moans her name. Can you hear it too? Nesta. Nesta. Nesta.
I wasn't sure Cassian was breathing.
What did she do, drowning in the ageless dark? What did she take?
It was the bite in the last word that snapped my tether of restraint. If you wish to find out, perhaps you should stop talking long enough for us to explain. My voice seemed to shake Cassian free of whatever trance he'd been in. His breathing surged tight and fast, and he scanned my face, apology in his eyes. The carver chuckled.
I so rarely get company. Forgive me for wanting to make idle talk.
He crossed an ankle over a foot.
And why have you sought my services?
We attained the Book of Breathings, I said casually. There are interesting spells inside. Codes within codes. Someone we know, Krat, most of them. She's still looking for others. Spells that could send someone like her home. Others like her, too. The carver's violet eyes flared bright as flame.
I'm listening.
Chapter 23. War is upon us, I said to the carver. Rumor suggests you have gifts that may be useful upon the battlefield. A smile at Cassian, as if understanding why he'd joined me.
In exchange... For a price,
the carver mused.
Within reason, Cassian countered.
The carver surveyed his cell.
And you think that I wish to go back?
Don't you? The carver folded his legs beneath his frame.
Where we came from. I do not believe it is now anything more than dust drifting across a plain. There is no home to return to. Not one that I desire.
For if he'd been here before even Amarin had arrived, tens of thousands of years, longer perhaps. I shoved against the sinking sensation in my gut.
Then perhaps improving your living conditions might entice you, if this world is where you wish to be.
This cell, Cursebreaker, is where I wish to be.
The carver patted the dirt beside him.
Do you think I let them trap me without good reason?
Cassian's entire body seemed to shift, seemed to go aware and focused, ready to haul us out of there. The carver traced three overlapping, interlocked circles in the dirt.
You have met my sister, my twin. The Weaver, as you now call her. I knew her as Striga. She and our older brother, Kostje. How they delighted in this world when we fell into it. How those ancient fae feared and worshipped them. Had I been braver, I might have bided my time, waited for their power to fade. For that long-ago fae warrior to trick Striga into diminishing her power and becoming confined to the middle. Kostje, too, confined and bound by his little lake on the continent. All before Prithian, before the land was carved up and any High Lord was crowned.
Cassian and I waited, not daring to interrupt.
Clever, that fae warrior. Her bloodline is long gone now, though a trace still runs through some human line.
He smiled, perhaps a bit sadly.
No one remembers her name, but I do. She would have been my salvation, had I not made my choice long before she walked this earth.
I waited, and waited, and waited, picking apart the story he laid out like crumbs of bread.
She could not kill them in the end. They were too strong. They could only be contained.
The carver wiped a hand through the circles he'd drawn, erasing them wholly.
I knew that, long before she ever trapped them. Took it upon myself to find my way here.
To spare the world from yourself?
Cassian asked, brows narrowing. The carver's eyes burned like the hottest flame.
To hide from my siblings?
I blinked. Why?
They are death gods, girl,
the carver hissed.
You are immortal, or long-lived enough to seem that way. But my siblings and I, we are different, and the two of them, stronger. So much stronger than I ever was. My sister, she found a way to eat life itself, to stay young and beautiful forever, thanks to the lives she steals.
The weaving, the threads inside that house, the roof made of hair. I made a note to throw Rhys in the Sidra for sending me into that cottage. But the carver himself... If they are death gods, I said, then what are you? Death. He had asked me over and over about death. About what waited beyond, what it felt like, where I had gone. I'd thought it mere curiosity, but... That boy's face crinkled with amusement. My son's face. The vision of the future that had once been shown to me all those months ago, as some sort of taunt or embodiment of what I hadn't dared yet admit to myself. What I was most uncertain of. And now... Now that young boy, a different sort of taunt, for the future I now stood to lose.
I am forgotten. That's what I am. And that's how I prefer to be.
The carver rested his head against the wall of rock behind him.
So you will find that I do not wish to leave, that I have no desire to remind my sister and brother that I am alive and in the world. Contained and diminished as they are, their influence remains considerable.
If Highburn wins this war,
Cassian said roughly,
you might find the gates of this place blown wide open, and your sister and brother unleashed from their own territories and interested in paying a visit.
Even Highburn is not that foolish.
A satisfied huff of air.
I'm sure there are other inmates here who will find your offer tempting.
My blood roared.
You will not even consider assisting us.
I waved a hand to the cell.
This is what you would prefer? For eternity?
If you knew my brother and sister, Cursebreaker, you would find this a much wiser and more comfortable alternative.
I opened my mouth, but Cassian squeezed my hand in warning. Enough. We'd said enough. Revealed enough. Looking so desperate. It would help nothing.
We should go,
Cassian said to me, the very picture of unruffled calm.
The delights of the hewn city await.
We'd indeed be late if we didn't leave now. I threw a glare at the carver by way of farewell, letting Cassian lead me toward the open cell door.
You are going to the hewn city,
the carver said, not entirely a question. I don't see how that is any business of yours, I said over my shoulder. The carver's beat of silence echoed around us, made us pause on the threshold.
One last attempt,
the carver mused, eyes skating over us.
To rally the entirety of the Night Court, I suppose.
Again, it is none of your concern, I said coolly. The carver smiled.
You will be bargaining with him.
A glance at the tattoo on my right hand.
I wonder what Kier's asking price will be.
A low laugh.
Interesting.
Cassian let out a long-suffering sigh.
Out with it.
The bone carver again fell silent, toying with the shard of the adder's bone in the dirt beside him.
The eddies of the cauldron swirl in strange ways,
he murmured, more to himself than us. We're going, I said, making to turn again, hauling Cassian with me.
My sister had a collection of mirrors in her black castle,
the carver said. We halted once more.
She admired herself day and night in those mirrors, gloating over her youth and beauty. There was one mirror. Iara Baros, she called it. It was old, even when we were young. A window to the world. All could be seen. All could be told through its dark surface. Kier possesses it. An heirloom of his household. Bring it to me. That is my prize. The Ouroboros, and I am yours to wield. If you can find a way to free me.
A hateful smile. I exchanged a glance with Cassian, and we both shrugged at the carver. We'll see, was all I said, before we walked out. Cassian and I sat on a boulder overlooking a silver stream, breathing in the chill mists. The prison loomed at our backs, a dreadful weight blocking out the horizon. You said that you knew the carver was an old god, I mused softly. Did you know he was a death god? Cassian's face was taut.
I guessed.
When I lifted a brow, he clarified,
he carves death into bones, sees them, enjoys them. It wasn't hard to figure out.
I considered. Was it you or Reese who suggested you come here with me?
I wanted to come, but Reese, he guessed it too.
Because what we'd seen in Nesta's eyes that day. Like calls to like, I murmured. Cassian nodded tightly.
I don't think even the Carver knows what Nesta is. But I wanted to see. Just in case.
Why?
I want to help.
It was answer enough. We fell into silence, the stream gurgling as it rushed by. Would you be frightened of her, if Nesta was... death? Or if her power came from it? Cassian was quiet for a long moment. He said at last,
I'm a warrior. I've walked beside death my entire life. I'd be more afraid for her to have that power. But I'm not afraid of her.
He considered, and added after a heartbeat,
Nothing about Nesta could frighten me.
I swallowed and squeezed his hand. Thank you. I wasn't sure why I even said it, but he nodded all the same. I felt him before he appeared, a spark of star-kissed joy flaring through me, right as Rhys stepped out of the air itself.
Well?
Cassian hopped off the boulder, extending a hand to help me down. You're not going to like his asking price. Rhys held out both hands to winnow us back to Valaris.
If he wants the fancy dinner plates, he can have them.
Neither Cassian nor I could muster a laugh, as we both reached for Rhys's outstretched hands.
You better bring your bargaining skills tonight,
was all Cassian muttered to my mate, before we vanished into shadow. Chapter 24. When we returned to the townhouse in the height of summer afternoon heat, Cassian and Asriel drew sticks for who would remain in Valaris that night. Both wanted to join us at the Hewn City, but someone had to guard the city, part of their long-held protocol. And someone had to guard Elaine, though I certainly wasn't about to tell Lucian that. Cassian, swearing and pissy, got the shorter stick, and Asriel only clapped him on the shoulder before heading up to the house to prepare. I followed after him a few minutes later, leaving Cassian to tell Rhys the rest of what the Carver had said, what he wanted. There were two people I needed to see up at the house before we left. I should have checked on Elaine earlier. Should have remembered that her would-have-been wedding was in a few days, but... I cursed myself for forgetting it. And as for Lucian... It wouldn't hurt, I told myself, to keep tabs on where he was. How that conversation with Asriel had gone yesterday. Make sure he remembered the rules we'd set. But 15 minutes later, I was trying not to wince as I walked down the halls of the House of Wind, grateful Asriel had gone ahead. I'd winnowed into the sky above the highest balcony, and since I figured now was as good a time as any to practice flying, I'd summoned wings. And fallen 20 feet onto hard stone. A rallied wind kept the fall from cracking any bones, but both my knees and my pride were significantly bruised by my graceless tumble through the air. At least no one had witnessed it. My stiff, limping steps, at least, had eased into a smoother gait by the time I found Elaine in the family library. Still staring at the window, but she was out of her room. Nesta was reading in her usual chair, one eye on Elaine, the other on the book spread in her lap. Only Nesta glanced my way as I slipped through the carved wooden doors. I murmured, "Hello," and shut the doors behind me. Elaine didn't turn. She was wearing a pale pink gown that did little to complement her sallow skin, her brown gold hair hanging in loose, heavy ringlets down her thin back. "It's a fine day," I said to them. Nesta arched an elegant eyebrow. Where's your menagerie of friends? I leveled a steely look back at her. Those friends have offered you shelter and comfort. And training, or whatever Amryn was doing. Are you ready for tonight? Yes. Nesta merely resumed reading the book in her lap. Pure dismissal. I let out a little snort that I knew would make her see red, and strode for Elaine. Nesta monitored my every step, a panther readying to strike at the merest hint of danger.
What are you looking at? I asked Elaine, keeping my voice soft, casual.
Her face was wan, her lips bloodless, but they moved, barely, as she said,
I can see so very far now, all the way to the sea.
Indeed, the sea beyond the Sidra was a distant sparkle.
It takes some getting used to. I can hear your heartbeat, if I listen carefully. I can hear her heartbeat, too. You can learn to drown out the sounds that bother you.
I had, entirely on my own. I wondered if Nesta had as well, or if they both suffered, hearing each other's heartbeats day and night. I didn't look to my other sister to confirm it. Elaine's eyes at last slid to mine, the first time she'd done so. Even wasted away by grief and despair, Elaine's beauty was remarkable. Hers was a face that could bring kings to their knees. And yet there was no joy in it. No light. No life. She said,
I can hear the sea. Even at night. Even in my dreams. The crashing sea. And the screams of a bird made of fire.
It was an effort not to glance to Nesta. Even the townhouse was too far to hear anything from the nearby coast. And as for some firebird.
There is a garden. At my other house, I said. I'd like for you to come tend it, if you're willing.
Elaine only turned toward the sunny windows again, the light dancing in her hair.
Will I hear the earthworms writhing through the soil? Or the stretching of roots? Will the bird of fire come to sit in the trees and watch me?
I wasn't sure if I should answer. It was an effort to keep from shaking. But I caught Nesta's eye, noting the glimmer of pain on my eldest sister's face, before it was hidden beneath that cool mask. There's a book I need you to help me find, Nesta, I said, giving a pointed stare to the stacks to my left. Far enough away for privacy, but close enough to remain nearby should Elaine need anything, do anything. Something in my chest cracked as Nesta's eyes also went to the windows before Elaine, to check, as I did, for whether they could be easily opened. Mercifully, they were permanently sealed, likely to protect against some careless fool forgetting to close them and ruining the books. Likely Cassian. Nesta wordlessly set down her book and followed me into the small labyrinth of stacks, both of us keeping an ear on the main sitting area. When we were far enough away, I threw up a shield of hard wind around us, keeping any sound inside.
How did you get her to leave her room?
I didn't, Nesta said, leaning against a shelf and crossing her slim arms. I found her in here. She wasn't in bed when I woke. Nesta must have panicked upon finding her room empty.
Did she eat anything?
No. I managed to get her to drink some broth last night. She refused anything else. She's been talking in those half-riddles all day. I dragged a hand through my hair, freeing strands from my braid.
Did anything happen to trigger?
I don't know. I check on her every few hours. Nesta clenched her jaw. I was gone for longer yesterday, though. While she trained with Amren, Rhys had informed me that by the end of it, Nesta's rudimentary shields were solid enough that Amren deemed my sister ready for tonight. But there, beneath that cool demeanor, guilt, panic. I doubt anything happened, I said quickly.
Maybe it's just part of the recovery process. Her adjustment to being Fae.
Nesta didn't look convinced. Does she have powers? Like mine? And what exactly are those powers, Nesta?
I don't know. I don't think so. Unless this is the first sign of something manifesting.
It was an effort not to add,
If you'd talk about what went on in the cauldron, perhaps we'd have a better understanding of it. Let's give her a day or two, see what happens. If she improves. Why not see now? Because